approached an intersection, and it looked like there was some broken glass in the road. I didn't know really what was going on at the time. And I came up and I saw what looked like something in the road there in front of that truck. And as I got closer, I realized that was a person that was lying there on the road.
I have been told by many eyewitnesses of how they gathered around me and how they held hands and prayed over me as I was in the road.
Envision the scene. A crushed vehicle, glass strewn across the road, sirens screaming in the distance while bystanders look on, hoping their prayers will make a difference. Today's story may cause you to think more about prayer and to reflect on the truth of Psalm 40, verse 1. It's today's Words to Live By. On a Tuesday night in East Texas, four ladies were on their way to a Bible study like they had done so many times before. But this night would be different. Welcome to Words to Live By. I'm Bill Houston. For Patty, today's guest, it would be the prayers of others during this critical time which made all the difference.
When I was in radio, there was a lady who stopped by one evening when I was getting off, and she talked to me about a Bible study that would be held at her home. And it was a Bible study that was outside of the church, including lots of the church members, but on more of a personal home basis. And I got involved in that back in the mid-90s and began to help lead that. And years went by, and in 2002... mid-June, in fact, June 18th, 2002, there were four ladies in a red Chevy Tahoe, and we were on our way to our last Bible study meeting before the summer break. And we had stopped at a red light, completely stopped. And we were always talking and singing and having a great time and enjoyed our time together. And we were on our way to this Bible study meeting. The lady who was in the front was pregnant. The young lady who was in the front passenger seat had just graduated from high school, had been accepted to Texas A&M College, and we were going to our last Bible study meeting before the summer break, when suddenly we were rear-ended horrifically from behind by an 18-wheeler pulling cars, and he was going full speed. He had not slowed down at all at the red light. He was on his cell phone, and he was under the influence of drugs. And he rear-ended us. And the amazing thing is that it threw me from behind the driver's seat. If you can envision this, I was sitting behind the driver in this red Chevy Tahoe. And suddenly the impact threw me across the Tahoe, out of the back side window on the passenger side, and my head and my body must have pelted that window open and burst it open, and I went into the air. And why, eyewitnesses have told me that I came out of the window and up into the air. And they said my body just went right down to the ground and across the highway. And there is when my life changed. And from there, the days were different from then on. And that day, that miracle that started that day, continues to this day. And I simply call it a miracle because I am alive today. And they did not expect me to make it, to live. And if I did, they said I would be a vegetable all of my life.
Patty lay on the pavement, barely alive. The friend who was pregnant would lose her baby in a miscarriage several weeks later. The young lady who had just graduated from high school died at the scene. the SUV's fourth passenger and the semi-truck driver survived. Many people converged on the site of the accident that day. One of those was Randy, a local radio station manager.
It was about 7 o'clock in the evening. I was coming home from work, and as I came down the highway, I approached an intersection, and looked like there was some broken glass in the road. I didn't know really what was going on at the time. And I came up and I saw what looked like something in the road there in front of that truck. And as I got closer, I realized that was a person that was lying there on the road. And something made me stop and just pull over to the side of the road. And I got out of the car and I started walking over that direction. There were some people with cell phones, so I figured I didn't need to use my phone to call any emergency vehicles. But they were standing way over to the side on the grass. And I walked right up to this person that was on the road. I didn't know whether this was a male or a female, except for the clothes. That was the only reason I could tell it was a female. Didn't recognize who it was at all. But I got just real close, just a couple of feet from the person, and looked and thought, is there anything possibly I could do here? It looked like that person was going to be dead just any minute now. And there was a pool of blood that was forming around the head. It was just a really horrible sight. I knew this person had been thrown out of a vehicle, and it looked like they'd be dead any minute. And I thought, well, I need to go do something where I can help somebody.
I have been told by many eyewitnesses of how they gathered around me and how they held hands and prayed over me as I was in the road, lying there helplessly, and how that the workers, the EMT workers, the highway patrolmen who were working that case were around me and working the case, how they prayed, and how that the workers expected me to die within a minute because they didn't see how a body could survive having lost all of that blood and barely breathing. I have learned that over 60% of my blood was lost from my body, and that my breathing was basically one breath per minute. And so when they lifelighted me into the hospital, the doctors, having talked to my parents, didn't think that I would make it. And if I did, they said that I would never see out of my right eye again. I would never walk again. I would never speak again, much less speak anything that resembled what I used to speak, how I used to speak, and that I couldn't remember things. There would be no resemblance in my personality to the way that I was before the accident. And if I moved at all, it would only be the moving of my right hand in a small amount, barely moving.
With such extensive injuries and trauma to her body, Patty's prognosis was grim at best. But God had other plans.
The first time I woke up after the accident was probably about 6 weeks into it, because I was in a coma. And I was in a coma for 5.5, 6 weeks. And the first time waking up, I don't remember much, but I've been told about things. I couldn't talk. I couldn't think. Such a small percentage of my brain was back, was able to think again, because I had severe head injury, and I couldn't breathe on my own. I had a ventilator, and they did a tracheotomy. So I learned the basics of living again. And it was a very slow process, a slow, gradual process. But the first time waking up, I remember my mom and dad, because they were there so often. But I honestly don't remember much at all. I've been told of how I would always cover my face and cover my head because I didn't want to see anyone. And then there would be a time when I would be positive towards someone, and I would let them talk to me for a bit. But I couldn't speak yet. The first time I woke up, I still had the tracheotomy, so I couldn't speak or make a noise. My brother was there at my first hospital that I was in, where I was still in a semi-coma. And it was he was the only one in the room. And so he had a stuffed animal. And he would keep, he told me, he kept putting it in front of my face and just back and forth and back and forth. And then he kept telling me, "What is this? Patty, tell me, what is this? I'm not going to leave until you tell me what this is." And he said, finally, I only mouthed the words because I had the trach in still. And I mouthed the words to him to get out of my face. And he said, "What did you say?" And he said, I mouthed it slowly again. And he said, he just started cheering me on. He was like, "Yes, you are in there. We are going to bring you back. You are there and we're going to work with you to bring you back." And he said, eventually, as he was in there alone with me, he said, I mouthed to him, "Pray for me." And he said in return, "Patty, I pray for you all the time." And he said, I immediately said back to him, "Pray for me now." And he said he immediately started praying for me. And it was from then on that he knew I was in there in spite of the coma, the head trauma, all of the things that had happened, and the way that I would come and go and how the staff prepared my family to lose me, because a few days after having been in there, pneumonia set in my lungs. And then during that first week of the pneumonia, a staph infection also attacked my lungs. And so they prepared my family to lose me because the body normally can't take that kind of attack. And the doctors helped and stayed in there on a regular basis with the medicine that they had put into me to help fight the pneumonia and fight the staph, because normally the medicine, they said, would counteract each other, basically. And so they were preparing my family on a regular basis to take care of business of what needs to be done because the end is near. But my God wasn't finished with me yet, and I continue on.
Prayer has been vital throughout Patty's story. There was a group that prayed at the scene of the accident. Her family prayed for her. And while lying in a hospital bed, Patty asked for prayer. And with good reason.
I had 4 or 5 fractures. One in my neck, in the cervix there. 2 in my pelvis area. 1 in my head area above my right eye and back in there. My right eye was completely out of its socket. They thought that I would never see out of that right eye and be able to put me back together. But I had very deep wounds and gashes truly all over my right side from my head to my toes, literally gashed open. They worked so hard to sew me back together again. And so they did. And I truly learned to do the basics. I had to learn the basics of living again. I had to learn to breathe. I had to learn to swallow. I had to learn to chew. I had to learn to even make a noise, moaning noise, groaning, anything. I had to learn to talk again. I had to learn to pronounce words again. I was in a bed for so long. Eventually, I was able to be in a wheelchair, and they would take me through different physical exercises and cognitive exercises on a daily basis, and then eventually, I was able to have a walker, a double walker, and with a gait belt around me. I would always have physical therapists with me who would walk with me and hold on to that gait belt and assist me every step of the way. And then eventually, I was able to move from that double walker to take it away and to walk only with my gait belt, and then eventually to take the gait belt off and walk alone. And the first time that I'd gotten to take my gait belt off and walk without it was I don't know if it was 3 months afterwards or more, but my parents had come to see me for the weekend at the rehab. And I was standing at the front door of the rehab watching for them. And when I saw them, I immediately opened the door and began to slowly walk down the path toward them. And they had never seen me walk like that before or walk at all, period. And when they saw me walking, they just started screaming. They were so excited. But they were afraid for me all at the same time because they didn't want me to fall. And they didn't know if I'd walked before or if I knew what I was doing. Apparently, I must have said something to them to let them know I can do it. It was a long time before I was able to eat anything. I simply lived off the IV tube and for months. And then I got to have a wee bit of pureed food. And my mom would feed me. So I was a child again. It was my second, really, babyhood again. And my mother would feed me. And I couldn't move my right hand. I couldn't hold on to the spoon. I couldn't use a pen. No fine motor skills were available on my right side and in my right hand or right arm. And so my mom would feed me this pureed food, and I could barely say anything. I couldn't talk in sentences. But she would tell me how I would often say to her, "It's good, Mom. It's good." And she would say to herself, "Oh, dear, it's awful. I can't stand this," because it didn't look good to her. But to me, it was luxurious. That was my gourmet meal, and I was an excited little woman. My mom and dad, they're outgoing people. They're people people. And they built such confidence into my brother and me. They supported us. They were our personal cheerleaders in everything that we did throughout high school, throughout everything we were involved in. They were always on our side, encouraging us, very straightforward with us, yes. Disciplined, oh yes, they were wonderful disciplinarians. And I got my fair share, and for real, I probably deserved more because I was the younger of two kids, and so I had to take care of myself because my brother would pick on me, and he could sit on me, and I didn't like that, and so I would run very fast to get away from him. But my mom and dad raised us with such confidence and support, and now that has just automatically gone into my adult life and help me to be who I am today and able to do what I do today and want to do what I do today. I have healed amazingly well throughout my healing process up until this point, and by God's grace, continuing on from this point. I can now see out of my right eye, and I have good vision. I don't have the blurred image. When I'm tired and exhausted, then yes, that's when my vision begins to go down, and it becomes blurred, and I see double division out of my right eye when I'm tired and exhausted. And I can drive again. My confidence is still coming back in that area. You know, it's amazing to me that having been away from it, I suppose, for so long from the accident, and everything that must have happened to me mentally and physically because of the trauma, of the severe head trauma. It's such a slow, gradual process to live again and to have confidence to live again. And that is still coming back to me. It's still growing inside of me. As life continues for me, day by day, more confidence comes back. I can drive now. I am walking now. I still have to be aware of my balance, because it's still difficult for me. Stairs are still very hard for me. I have to really think. And thinking and concentrating takes so much energy out of me. And I've learned how that's common for severe head injury. It's difficult. Concentrating takes energy. Walking takes energy. The common things that people do take so much energy. Socially talking, that takes a lot of energy. But I'm okay with that because I'm not giving up. I'm determined to do my best at whatever I do and whatever opportunities he gives me, I will lay hold of those opportunities with all of my energy. I will give it my all. You know, and for the first time that I'm starting to enjoy life again, because I've always been a positive person and full of life, but having gone through the trauma I've gone through, it takes away that joy. It takes away that energy. It takes away that fully alive spirit, that energy. But God is restoring that to me. Truly, day by day, He is blessing me with more and more energy to live, and in my own words, to give away what I've been given. But I enjoy that. That makes up my heartbeat, to give away what I've been given. And my heartbeat, my being alive, my purpose for being here, and it is simply this: mad now. And people say, Patty, what? Mad now? Wow, don't people get mad all the time? Mad, what are you talking about? But what I mean is simply this: make a difference now. Don't wait. You don't know how much time you have left. And you don't know what your days will be like. And you don't know what your time will be like. But while you have the opportunity, just like Paul says, therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the household of faith. That is truly my heartbeat.
That heartbeat is based on words to live by found in Galatians 6:10. Here the Apostle Paul looks at the many characteristics of a new life in Jesus Christ, one of which is to seek to do good to all people. Patty's desire is to make a difference now by giving to others the hope and love she's been given. Patty found more words to live by in the Old Testament book of Psalms.
Psalm 40. Wow, that is my one big word for Psalm 40. Wow, God gave me that when I was at my last rehab before I was released as an outpatient. I wasn't able to think very well then. I would say maybe, I wonder if 30 to 40% of my brain function activity was back. I wasn't able to think beyond what I could see. And even what I could see, I couldn't think very deeply. I wasn't able to be very attentive and different things. But Psalm 40, there was a small Bible that was right beside my bed at the rehab. And one night, I opened up this Bible that some friends had given me, and I began to read. I was able to read then very slowly, but I read. And Psalm 40 truly touched me, particularly Psalm 40, verse 1. I waited patiently for the Lord, and He inclined to me and heard my cry. I waited patiently for the Lord, and that I was doing. And He inclined to me. He came down to me. He sat beside me on that bed at rehab. And He stayed over me and watched over me. And He heard my cry. Literally. And He stayed near me all throughout that time. I don't know that I slept very much that night. And you know, I think having gone through such a trauma, such a traumatic time, that etches a place in a person's life that nothing else could etch and mark. Because it is so deep, it cuts you deeply. It goes very deeply into the depths of who you are. From that point on, that depth is a part of who you are, whether you choose to live from that or not. But God is blessing me to live from that point, from this time forward, that I'm able to give from that point, to love people from that point, to laugh from that point. And I've always been full of life before, and I love to laugh. But it's nice to get to laugh again, to want to laugh again, and to live and love from that depth of my being. And that, to me, is truly a gift. Just like God teaches us in His Word to glory and tribulation, or to glory in persecution, and how he grows character from that, perseverance from that, hope from that. And hope does not disappoint us, because the love of God has been poured out into our hearts by the Holy Spirit he has given to us. He is living his word in me and through me more than ever before. And it's so much through the hard times, the difficulties, the trauma, and how he is giving through that. I am now moving much, much better than what they ever thought possible. And it proves that with God, all things are possible, because only he works miracles. And that's why I'm alive today, is for his honor and his glory. So I simply give all myself to him, as I did before, but now much more. And it's much like Ephesians 3:20-21. We know it well, how he works exceedingly more and exceedingly abundantly beyond what we could dare to ask or imagine. And he does that. And he is doing that. So my life continues for his honor, his glory, his purpose.
A June night in 2002 changed Patty's life in many ways. It brought a clearer focus about the important issues, like reflecting God's glory and becoming a person devoted to prayer. In the Bible study booklet, Praying with Confidence, you'll read why Oswald Sanders said, "The point of prayer is not to get answers from God. The goal of prayer is perfect and complete oneness with God." Patty's story reflects the power of prayer and why prayer also has a way of changing those who pray. Praying with Confidence can help you overcome disappointment in prayer. We've all had those times when prayer was difficult and challenging. This booklet will help answer concerns like, "I don't know what to pray," or, "I'm not sure if prayer does any good." Well, Praying with Confidence is more than a booklet on what prayer is. It helps us see why prayer draws us closer to God and therefore helps transform us into the image of his Son, the Lord Jesus Christ. Praying with Confidence will be sent to you without cost or obligation. To receive yours, you can address Words to Live By, Grand Rapids, Michigan, 49555. If you live in Canada, you can write Words to Live By, Box 1622, Windsor, Ontario, N9A6Z7. If you'd like to learn more about our program or even submit the Words to Live By God is using in your life, you can do so by logging on to our homepage. That address is words.net. That's words with an S, .net. We'd like to thank Patty and Randy for telling us today's story. Our thanks also to radio station KBJS in Jacksonville, Texas, for their help with today's program. For the entire Words to Live By team, this is Bill Houston inviting you to keep on praying, reading God's Word, and watching until Jesus returns, perhaps today. Words to Live By is provided by RBC Ministries, publishers of Our Daily Bread.